Welcome, Dumbheads, to MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. In this season, we are examining every single goddamn page of Palladium's Heroes Unlimited to determine what is the dumbest thing on that page. Every episode is one page, every episode is short. If you'd like to play along at home, this is Heroes Unlimited Revised Second Edition, the second printing from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 330 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the Magic Explained section, talking about all the different spells that magical characters can learn. This show has a format because it's a daily podcast, and God knows it's digressive enough without me sitting here with no plan and no subject matter and just bullshitting into a microphone for 10 minutes or whatever. That's no way to cast a pod. So I need a format. However, you know, the topic of this podcast is the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited. And sometimes the dumbest thing on a page is boring. Now, if everything on the page is boring, then, you know, I just kind of got to vamp. But sometimes there's a dumb, boring thing on the page, and then there's something else more interesting that I'd rather talk about. Normally, this is because that other thing angers me. Today is one of those days, and I'm going to follow my heart. We're going to do the format. Don't worry. Don't hit me up on Ko-fi trying to take back your donations, for which I'm very grateful. I am going to identify the dumbest thing on this page. But once those boxes are ticked, I just want to take a minute to talk about one of my pet peeves in gaming. So, okay, let's tick those boxes. The dumbest thing on this page, for my money, is the spell Heal Self. It's a very simple spell. You cast it on yourself, it costs 20 PPE, it restores 1d6 of either your hit points or your SDC for every two levels of experience you have, so it scales. This spell's presence here is dumb for reasons that should now be quite predictable, given my complaints about the rest of this section. There's already a spell called Heal Wounds. It's a two-level lower spell, it costs half the potential psychic energy, and for many applications and at many levels, it is better, in some cases strictly better, than Heal Self, which is a higher level spell that costs twice as much. Heal Self obviously can only be used on yourself, whereas Heal Wounds can be used on anybody. Secondly, Heal Wounds does not scale, so if you're high level, then Heal Self is a better choice, assuming you only need to heal yourself. And while the cost of Heal Self is higher, there's a question of action economy. So basically, and I did the math on all this, it runs down like this. At caster levels 1 through 2, Heal Self is strictly inferior to Heal Wounds. At level 3, it becomes better only in scenarios where you need to restore your own HP under time constraints. So like, I need to get my own HP back in a hurry, but not such a hurry, like I'm not in combat. Then finally, at level 5, it is straight up more efficient to heal hit points with Heal Self than with Heal Wounds, because your HP healing rate has scaled to the point that you're now getting a better bang for your buck on PPE if you heal your specifically hit points, not SDC, with Heal Self. All of this is terribly dull. I understand that. I know what I'm about. That's why we're not spending most of the episode talking about this. These two spells are different in ways that are not fun, not very significant. Really, the only time they're going to come into play is a situation where you're under time constraints, you're down to your hit points, which, by the way, you shouldn't be. If you're a wizard, what are you doing? I mean, we're in a game where it's not unusual for characters to have 100 plus SDC. Some characters may have hundreds. Granted, a wizard isn't likely to. Even a wizard could easily have 60, 70, if they're a boxer wizard or an assassin wizard, as they should be. If you're at the point where somebody is just standing there beating the shit out of your wizard until you're down to hit points, you know, that 20 or so points of like life-threatening damage you can sustain before you die, you shouldn't be in that situation. That's why wizards dress the way they do. You can't fist fight somebody with those big hanging sleeves, hood hanging down, slipping over your eyes while you're trying to fight. Because if you're in a foot chase that then turns into a fist fight, you're already fucked. Just get a head start on casting reincarnation, because this incarnation is fucking done for. But it really is only in that scenario where you are down to your last few hit points and you need to get them back in a hurry, but not too much of a hurry. Because again, if you're in the middle of fisticuffs in the street, you don't want to be spending two punches worth of time to heal a half punch worth of damage. That's how you lose wizard boxing matches. And once again, as we've talked about before with other spells, it's not so much that either one of these spells is bad, it's that there's no reason at all to have both of them in this game, with such limited space on the spell list. So what would I suggest to take its place, you ask? Or maybe you don't ask. My vow binds me either way. It doesn't matter what you ask. How about this one? From Heroes Unlimited Revised, Teleport Self. This is a mid-range teleport spell that allows you to teleport only yourself up to a maximum range of like 5 miles, and that's pretty much it. It's a very simple spell. It would have been a much better choice to have in like multiple iterations, to have like a lesser version of teleport plus a better version of teleport later, than this Heal Self, Heal Wounds thing, where there are two spells that basically have the same functionality. The only really interesting difference is the fact that you can use one of them on other people, whereas with teleport, The ability to teleport yourself versus teleport yourself and allies is fundamentally a different ability in the way that it affects the campaign. When you can teleport the party, that's a party asset. That's a thing that affects how the group can approach situations. Whereas when you can only teleport yourself, that's good for, you know, herring off on your own, going on a recon mission, using it tactically, but it doesn't give the party the ability to initiate an attack or an adventure by all teleporting in en masse. So it's a fundamentally different thing in the way it affects the campaign, so you could have two different spells for it. Also, that range of about 5 miles is a moderate range that is in between the two other spells that are in second edition. Sadly, that middle level of teleport functionality was removed from Heroes Unlimited second edition to make space for redundant healing spells, among other things. I think this kind of decision-making really does reveal a lack of sophistication that I don't necessarily pin on Palladium specifically, or the author of this book. It was a different time in gaming when this game was made, certainly when the original Heroes Unlimited was created, but even in 1998, the indie gaming thing was not huge yet. The more sophisticated way of analyzing the mechanics of a game in terms of their effect on the story, that had not really come around yet. We were still in a mode, for example, of Dungeons and Dragons, where we were thinking about simulation. We were thinking about, like, well, you know, based on what I know about a beholder, what would their living room look like? Where would they poop? What kind of food chain supports a multi-eyed, gas-filled abomination? I feel like, you know, there may be isolated instances, but it wasn't until later that we sort of all universally adopted the game design technology of, like, what we need to know about beholders and figure out about beholders is how they affect a D&D session where you go and beat the shit out of a beholder, or more likely, a beholder beats the shit out of you. The gameplay experience is primary there, not the sort of logic of the fiction of the world. Both are important, but we're playing a game, and so gameplay drives everything. Certainly, it drives your choice of what to put in your rulebook and in your rules. And in this case, having multiple tiers of teleportation really does drive gameplay in different ways, depending on what level the characters are at. Whereas having these two different healing spells, none of that meaningfully drives gameplay. None of that changes the way we approach the story or the way the story unfolds on a deep level. So, cut one. We've also got an entry in Blind Watch today, the spell Invisibility, and then in parentheses, Superior. This is super extra invisibility. You're so invisible with this spell, dogs can't even smell you. You've transcended the whole physical spectrum. You're literally so invisible that your shit doesn't stink. This is the absolute king of invisibility. You're so invisible that even people who can see the invisible can barely see you. It says here, quote, "The power to see the invisible will only reveal a semi-transparent, ghost-like image of the character, which gives attackers a penalty of -2 to strike." You also get a prowl of 84% because on top of being invisible, you make barely any noise. However, this version of invisibility is different from simple invisibility in that if you attack while under the effect of the spell, then the effect is broken. So this truly is for stealth, not for fucking people up with knives or whatever while they can't fight back, which is, you know, what player characters typically use invisibility for if they can get away with it. As with invisibility, invisibility superior does not give the important stats that you would need to actually run the power. You've got to infer them from other versions of invisibility found elsewhere in the book. But there's no other power quite like this. I mean, insofar as this is invisibility, insofar as you're someone that your opponent can't see, therefore what penalties would they take for attacking you, I guess you would compare it to the superpower invisibility, just like you would for simple invisibility. So I guess by default, the two spells match, since neither of them have rules. And you've got to make your best guess for both, and for me, the best guess would be the same for both. So in that sense, I guess these rules match. Like, I, the reader, am being left to do all the work, and I choose to do the same work in both occasions, so the rules agree for once, because I did it, because I made them match. Yay for me. However, I can't technically call this a win. I can't technically call this a match, because this spell has an additional effect. You're so invisible, you're super invisible, that your super invisibility up against C invisibility balances out to, like, almost invisible, this, like, weird ghostly state where it's like even a person who can see the invisible, even a person who can see into other dimensions or whatever, has to, like, squint to see you, and that gives them a -2 to strike. Now, there is, albeit limited, precedent for this in other places in the rules. Notably, the intangibility superpower gives you a ghostly, semi-transparent appearance when you use it, and there, no penalty to strike. So close. Some of these are so close. But once again, if we do the work to search across the whole breadth of this fucking book to find comparisons to fill in the rules that aren't given, when we do finally unearth those rules from secret caches throughout the book and lay them out on the table before us, we find that they don't match. Although, who's to say? I mean, there's no strictly comparable power to this, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm fully familiar with the idea of almost invisible. Like, who am I to judge? I'm not a doctor of invisible. Who knows? But on Blind Watch, we're looking for rules that match exactly, and these rules don't match exactly, so there you have it. And with that, the boxes are ticked. You may notice that section of the podcast, kind of light on jokes, like it's just a gameplay observation. That's why I didn't really want to talk about it. What I really want to talk about is a spell called Metamorphosis : Animal. This is one of a number of metamorphosis spells. It allows the mage to turn into other creatures of various kinds, like another person, or a monster of some kind, or whatever. There are some in Heroes Unlimited, there are more in other sources. This one allows you to turn yourself into an animal, and it falls afoul of my perennial foe, one of the worst things in game design, and specifically magic design, in role-playing games across the whole spectrum of gaming. I'll just give you the quote, I'll let the spell speak for itself. Quote, "The invocation can completely transform a character into a particular animal, from an alley cat or cocker spaniel to a lion, wolf, alligator, bird, etc. In animal form, the character gets all the inherent abilities and defenses which that animal form may offer, but retains his own IQ, ability to speak, memory, SDC, and hit points." So turning into an animal is a classic mage ability. Real life literature and legend is full of stories of magical people who can like turn themselves into animals in various ways. You can't not have this in your magic system if your magic system is meant to represent like a traditional folkloric or literary view of magic. It's hard to implement. I understand that. I know it's a challenge, but my demands are not so great. If I take a spell that allows me to turn into a wolf, I just want to be a goddamn wolf. I want to do like a wolf does. I want to run through the woods. I want to have vicious fangs. I want to have a good sense of smell. You know what I don't want? The SDC of a beardy, anemic, goddamn floppy robe-wearing wizard. I don't want to be a nerd wolf. I want to be a jock wolf. I mean, sure, I might go, you know, track people with scent. I might turn into a wolf, you know, for speed. And that's fine. Like, those are abilities that a wolf should have and does have, according to the rules presented here. There's a helpful little table that tells you the typical speeds of different kinds of animals, what kind of damage their claws and teeth do. And that's all fine. But if all I wanted to do was track somebody down by scent, I would have turned into like a basset hound or something. Something small, something cute. Something that maybe in a pinch can ride public transit. You're not supposed to let a basset hound on a public bus, but if one got on there, the driver wouldn't be like, oh my God, we gotta pull over and kick this basset hound the fuck off on the side of the road. I think the driver would be like, hey, whose basset hound is this? Like, you can buy yourself some time. If you're a wolf, shit, I mean, how are you supposed to even wait at the stop if you're a wolf? I mean, granted, people are more likely to leave than to try to get you out of there themselves. Although, I'll be honest with you, I'm an inveterate user of public transit, and I've certainly regularly used some bus stops where a wolf had better fucking watch himself. My point is, for utility, you would go with like a small, unobtrusive animal. If you're turning into like a wolf or a bear or a lion, it's because you want to go fuck somebody up. You want to fight like a wolf. And you can't fight like a wolf when you've got the hit points and the SDC of a wizard. Now, you could say that this problem is ameliorated somewhat in Heroes Unlimited by the fact that everybody is so goddamn buff. Like, since everybody needs to take boxing, everybody's pretty much encouraged to take physical skills. You get random boosts to SDC from super abilities and things like that. The average superhero, even if they're a non-combat superhero, like a wizard, is likely to have an SDC that rivals even a tough natural animal. Heroes Unlimited never gives us exact numbers for how tough a wolf is, but fortunately it does give us a reference to another Palladium book that tells us that. The Palladium Book of Monsters and Animals, 2nd edition. And if you check in this book, which is truly a delight for anyone whose campaign has ever required them to ask, how hard is it to kill every individual kind of songbird? If that's you, this book is right up your alley. It has detailed stats for like every kind of animal. It does have wolves, and wolves have an average of 20 hit points and 27 SDC. Because we're on Palladium Fantasy scale, even a jungle Kodiak, otherwise known as an Ernie, this is a gigantic jungle bear, it's like over 2,000 pounds, it has an average of 50 hit points and 65 SDC. That's a total of 115 damage it can sustain. And I mean, that's tough, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for what a starting character would have who doesn't even really have toughness powers. If you've got good physical skills, maybe a random super ability like Winged Flight gives you a big SDC bonus for whatever reason. Maybe you're even a superhero who's, you know, third level or something, so you've got those couple extra dice of hit points. You could easily have that much total damage capacity. So you might think, okay, this isn't such a big problem because in all likelihood, your wizard is going to have more damage capacity than a wolf would. I mean, it's stupid, but it's true. But that doesn't solve the problem of what you want to be able to do in wolf form for two reasons. Number one, player characters are outliers. A first level wizard is outrageously tougher in all likelihood than an average person just for no reason, just because they're a player character and a superhero. But when it comes to basic biology, you know, knowledge of boxing aside, a wolf is tougher than a person. Certainly a gigantic jungle bear is tougher than a person. So when a tough person changes their body into the body of a wolf or a 2,000-pound bear, they should get tougher, shouldn't they? So that's the logical argument. The gameplay argument for why this spell doesn't do what you want it to do is, look, if my, 60-odd SDC that I have as a first-level wizard who knows how to box were enough to just rock up to a supervillain and kick his ass, I would just do that. I would save the PPE, I would hike up my robe and stuff it in my pants, cinch up my big floppy sleeves with a scrunchie, and just go beat the shit out of him, if I could, but I can't, because it's a superhero game that anticipates big bruisers, and I'm not one. I'm just a dude, albeit a weirdly tough dude because it's a superhero game. And turning into a wolf, if it's not giving me enough SDC to go be a frontliner along with super strong mutants and battle droids, then what am I supposed to do as a wolf? Just sniff around the battlefield during the fight, looking for helpful items? This isn't Secret of Evermore. If I'm a wolf, I want to kill people. I want to be a jock wolf. I don't want to be stuck looking for alchemical components like a nerd wolf. This is something that so many games do badly. Everything from like the D6 system, which has a truly horrible animal metamorphosis ability where shapeshifters have to individually buy every ability they want from the animal they turn into. So like by default, if you turn into a bat, that bat can't fly. Horrible. I'm not even going to get into the shit show that is polymorph in all the various versions of Dungeons & Dragons. Suffice it to say that in many versions of Dungeons & Dragons, playing a wizard who actually is a wolf is better supported than playing a wizard who can turn into a wolf. More mechanically sound. I think it tends to be more freeform games that actually get this right. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You got to start with the gameplay. If I'm turning into a wolf, I want to be a wolf. I want to go tear people apart. I want to find them with my sense of scent. I want to chase them down with my wolf speed. And then I want to rip into them with my wolf fangs. And then I want to howl. You give me all those things, I'm fine. But you got to start from that and then write the spell backward to make sure I can do those things. Unfortunately, Metamorphosis colon animal gives me everything but that. It allows me to continue talking. Once again, like a nerd wolf. I'm like a wolf who's a wizard and all the other wolves are fighters. And I got to hang back and cast spells. I get to keep my own IQ in memory. So like I'm a wolf with a lot of skills, but I need to hide behind the other wolves. What's the point? I'm already a wizard. I can already hide behind a wolf. Wizards with improved familiar do it all the time. I want to be a wolf, a jock wolf. And while I get lots of useful abilities from this spell, and it's not the dumbest thing on this page because this spell has plenty of utility. It's a thing lots of people are going to want their spellcaster to be able to do, so it deserves its space. It does take up a big chunk of space, but that space is relatively well used, giving nice general rules for all the different types of animals. It's just this one blind spot. It's just keeping your wizard SDC. The fact that no matter what animal you turn into from the spectrum of God's creation, they all have the same amount of physical toughness as a puny wizard, it just ruins this spell for its most dramatic applications. So that's like a pet peeve of mine for magic design. Don't do this with your game. If I can turn into a wolf, let me be a wolf. Anyway, this has been like an analysis-heavy episode. I hope you don't mind. I'm passionate about this one pet peeve, but as usual, my passion expresses itself in the form of wonky game design critique. I am who I am and I want what I want. Join me next time for another spell that does not do justice to the majesty of the wolf on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.